Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
The Last Moment. 6. Tobek inspected his face in the copper looking glass and saw what he had always wanted. The reflection bared none of his horrifying scars or misshapen features. The man who looked back at Tobek was comely, with unmarred skin, sharp cheekbones, and a strong jaw. The man looking back at Tobek had bright eyes that looked ready to challenge the world. Tobek didn't feel up to challenging the world. He just wanted to rest. The glamour ritual he had cast upon himself had worked, if only for a day, but it left him feeling drained, even more than usual. He had not slept well since he entered Kalmek's forests, and his skin shifting back then had only deepened his exhaustion. Then there was the wild hunt that plagued his dreams. He regularly woke up early, gasping and in a cold sweat. Yes, he wanted nothing more than to rest. Tobek heard a skittering in the corner of the room, and his head shot to the side. A mouse darted across the floor. Tobek narrowed his eyes and clicked his tongue. For a moment, his vision blurred, and he felt a heady sensation of soaring through the sky. His mouth watered as he imagined diving to the earth and gripping the mouse in his talons. Tobek closed his eyes, slapped his comely face, and thought, "You're not an eagle anymore. You're a man." He gathered his breath and tried to ground himself, as his old mentor Zhu had taught him. He focused on the sounds around him, distant music and raucous laughter from the inn's common room beneath him, and counted his breath. When he opened his eyes, he was back in his room, no longer an eagle in the sky. "The instinct shouldn't linger this long," Tobek said aloud. He set about collecting the materials in his makeshift ritual circle. He had a long day ahead of him. He needed to get out of Crag Ross, to get away from civilization. He needed to rest, alone in the mountains. Tobek headed towards Crag Ross's eastern entrance, where he had come in not a day before. But he was stopped by the two Mahakam defenders guarding the traitor's quarter. They said he could go no further. "I don't understand," Tobek said. His Nilfgaardian accent sounded more muted, a side effect of the glamour spell. "Why can't I leave?" The Mahakam defender scratched the beard sticking out of his helmet. "I told you it's policy. Outsiders are to be confined to the traitor's quarter, unless they have a lead ring granting them passage. Even to just get a breath of fresh air outside?" The defender shrugged. "Policy." Tobek kept himself from cursing. A vivid image flashed in his mind, that of Tobek ripping the defender's throat out with his beak, blood pouring down his beard. "You can't leave unattended," the defender with the soft throat added. "But we have a guard that can accompany you. After all, we get plenty of visitors who want to explore the scenic mountain trails." "Yes, that," Tobek snapped. He shook his head, and all the thoughts of warm blood running down his gullet dissipated. He would go mad if he remained in the mountain any longer. He needed sun and fresh air, not smoke and shadows. "I'll go with an escort." Tobek had to wait an uncomfortably long time while the defender fetched a guide. His guide sported a short yellow beard and asked Tobek to follow along. They left through the eastern entrance, and cold mountain air filled his lungs and buffeted his face. Tobek's eyes watered, and he grinned. "Fine, eh?" his guide said. "Nothing like Mahakam air, that's for true." "That's for true," Tobek repeated. "Where are we allowed to go?" The guide craned her neck and pointed to a couple of trailheads to their left. "Can get some nice views that way, but we can't dawdle. We only have an hour." An hour was not enough time, but Tobek had an idea of how to get around that. He pointed to a trailhead to their right. "What's that way?" "Settlements," the guide said quickly. "Off limits for visitors." Tobek frowned. "Settlements?" "Not every dwarf, gnome, or halfling lives in the mountain, or even wants to. They simply don't want any visitors disturbing their peace. Tarbeck didn't press the matter further. He followed the guide along one of the trailheads. The path was well paved and could fit two at a time. The guide talked about how the Mohakam dwarves have lived along this mountain range since time immemorial. Some theorized that the first dwarves were born within the mountain itself. But there's never been a consensus, the guide said. Rock carvings dating back 1,700 years seem to suggest. The sun felt divine on Tarbeck's skin, and the air refreshed his lungs. The views, when not obscured by mountain peaks, were stunning. They stopped at a turnout that gave a view of the kingdom of Edirne below. Beautiful, isn't it? The guide said. Tarbeck nodded. I need to take a piss. The guide wrinkled her nose and pointed to a secluded section of the turnout. I'll wait for you back on the trail. Tarbeck made sure she was out of sight before quickly stripping off his clothes and tossing them behind mountain scrub. He knew skin shifting again so soon might shatter his sanity and rebuild his mind to that of a beast. But he had no choice. He needed to get away from everyone. He needed to fly, but not as an eagle this time. Tarbeck closed his eyes and emptied his mind, save for a single image of a red-breasted sparrow. Drawing in power, he felt his body shrink while his mind stayed constant, like a rock jutting out of a raging river. The ground is much closer when the sparrow opens his eyes. The sparrow is hungry. A juicy worm might do the trick. The sparrow wastes no time taking to the air. It's what he is made to do. The view is even better from the air, but a sparrow's eyes are not very sharp, and he can't see far ahead. Instead, the sparrow focuses on the mountains in front of him, ignoring his growling stomach. The sparrow lands on a desolate plateau, out of sight from the trail. With a similar focus, Tarbeck felt his body return to its accustomed shape, naked as the day he was born. Still as comely, though, he thought, inspecting his muscular arms. The glamour may only hold for a day, but it held strong. Tarbeck's stomach grumbled, and he wiped the saliva away with the back of his mouth. He resisted the urge to defecate where he stood, wondering why he should stand on ceremony. Every other creature answered nature the moment it called, after all. The mountain air whipped Tarbeck's bare skin, and brought him back to his senses. The longer one stays an animal, the more that animal stays with them when they come back, Zoo had once told Tarbeck. That's why Tarbeck made sure to never skin shift for too long. But he had seen Zoo shift for twice as long and never suffer any of the effects that he was feeling now. Well, of course, you're unpracticed, untrained, Tarbeck said. He nearly jumped at the sound of his own voice. Knowing the time was short, Tarbeck sat down and closed his eyes and emptied his mind yet again. The only way to ward this off, Zoo had continued, is with unbroken meditation. It allows your mind to reset. Tarbeck found that to be true. His mind collapsed in on itself, and Tarbeck felt like he was bathing in a cool, ink-black pool. Within 2 hours, he began to feel like himself again. That is, human. Tarbeck stretched and took in the view. He saw the kingdom of Edirne to the east, the kingdom of Temeria to the west, and Nilfgaard to the south. Black smoke dotted Edirne and Temeria, further up than Tarbeck liked. The Nilfgaardians, his countrymen, were advancing further north. It's no concern of mine, Tarbeck thought, not quite believing it. He told himself he had more pressing matters to focus on, like finding out more about the Wild Hunt. He was convinced their arrival at Kalmek was not an isolated incident. Tarbeck still hoped his new companions would come around to his way of thinking, and help him investigate the matter. And if they don't, he thought, I'll leave them behind. Some things, after all, were bigger than war. Satisfied, Tarbeck's skin shifted back into a sparrow, and this time he does not feel the urge to hunt for worms, for now. He returns to the turnout where he left his clothes, only his clothes are no longer there. The sparrow utters a shrill chirp and flies back onto the trail. His guide is gone as well. The sparrow flies to the entrance of Crag Ross. The large doors, however, are closed, and other than a few patrolling guards on the plateau below, it doesn't look like anyone would be coming in or out. Flying down to the door, the sparrow gives the stone a quick peck. It hurts his beak. The sparrow sets his sights on the brass horn jutting out of the wall. He hops onto the rim and peers inside. It is a tight squeeze, but what other hope does the sparrow have? The sparrow pushes his head into the mouth of the horn. His pudgy body presses against the cold edges, and he feels his chest constrict and eyes bulge. His taloned feet scratch against the brass, and the echoes nearly blow his eardrums out. Blind animal panic starts to nibble at the edges of conscious thought. Just when the sparrow thinks the brass tunnel won't end, he sees a light. It is dim, but it is something. He presses forward, and pops out of the horn and lands on the cold, hard stone. The sparrow chirps in joy and allows himself to lie on the ground for a moment. He feels his tiny heart might burst. A booming cry sounds from above, and the sparrow sees a boot coming down on him. Instinct takes over as the sparrow flaps his wings in a panicked flurry to avoid the dwarven foot. The sparrow flies high into the shadowed mountain hall, leaving the dwarf and his curses far below. The sparrow's eyes adjust poorly to the dark, and for a moment he thinks he will smash against Crag Ross's stone ceiling and break his neck. He forces his body down and dives towards the light. The sparrow wants nothing more than to go back to his room and find another set of clothes. Well, that, and to eat a juicy worm. That's when the sparrow remembers that he left the room key in his pants pocket. The sparrow screams, but only a small chirp comes out. He lands near the Crag Ross Trader's Quarter Inn and Tavern. The doors and windows are closed. He hears rowdy singing inside. The sparrow waits, suppressing the urge to shit on the ground. A patron drunkenly stumbles out. The sparrow flies inside and lands on a wooden beam in the rafters. The tavern is nearly full with humans and dwarves, singing a loud sea shanty. A woman in a red cap stands on one of the tables and leads everyone along, a pint of ale in hand. A one-eyed man and an elf sit at the same table, clapping and singing. The sparrow spies a room next to the bar. Puffing up his feathered chest, the sparrow flies. The storeroom the sparrow lands in is little more than a larder. Shelves of flour and bread cover the wall, and a bubbling cauldron hangs over a fire in the hearth. The room is small, but there is a second door at the back. The sparrow shifted back into Tobek as quickly as he could. This was a mistake. It felt like his bones weren't properly set, and his joints were on fire. Tobek stifled a scream. Still, he stood up and rushed to the door near the back. The knob wouldn't turn. Tobek sighed and peeked his head back into the tavern. Everyone was still singing and clapping along with the woman on the table. Plow it, Tobek thought. Better to suffer temporary embarrassment being nude in a tavern than to sneak around and risk death as any other animal. He heard a chuckle behind him. Tobek spun around to find a woman standing near the hearth. She was exceedingly beautiful, with dark skin and curly hair. Tobek quickly grabbed a loaf of bread to cover his crotch. If you want my honest opinion, the woman said, I think this look becomes you, embarrassing as it is. Oh, do you fancy a go? Tobek couldn't stop himself from saying. He regretted the quip even as he said it. The woman shook her head and smiled. Tobek felt a pulse of power emanate from her. His breath felt cold and caught in his lungs, and he coughed. Tried to take in more air, and found it difficult. I figured you'd want help out of your predicament first. Tobek's mouth felt as dry as the Korath Desert as he sucked in quick, short breaths. Purple stars danced around the corners of his vision. Tobek nodded. Then he felt the woman's power disappear in an instant, and breath came easily to him now. Tobek sucked in air greedily, tendrils of spit running from his mouth. Well, I'm happy to return you safely to your room, the woman said brightly. On one condition. Anything, Tobek said, and meant it. Careful, he thought. She's a sorceress. My condition is that you must attend the delegation feast tonight. Find me when you're there, and we'll talk more. I won't be difficult to find. Do you agree? Tobek nodded, though he had no idea what she was talking about. What's your name? He asked. My name is Yana. Give me one moment, Tobek. Yana turned the locked knob, and to his surprise it gave way with ease. Yana wagged a finger at him and said, No peeking. She returned less than a minute later with a gray silk tunic and matching trousers. She handed them to Tobek. You can use the storeroom to change, she said. Don't forget, find me at the feast later tonight. I will, Tobek said. Thank you for helping me out. The storeroom was filled with salted meat hanging on hooks. Tobek laid the clothes on the floor and locked the door. He got dressed while consciously emptying his head of all thoughts, like his mentor Zhu had taught him. 7. The foundry, as expected, was hot. Jeremiah was used to such heat, of course, but he had never felt it so intensely before. This was partially due to size. The Crag Ross Foundry was easily the size of Lonkoff, the town of Undying, likely larger. There again seemed to be no ceiling, as large leaden crucibles hung on fat chains suspended in shadow. Molten metal flowed freely from these crucibles with alarming frequency, dropping into lower pots or into large stone slabs with designs carved into them. Dozens of forges were lit and active, and each was bigger than any forge Jeremiah had ever seen, capable of accommodating multiple workers at once. The dwarves moved in the hustle and bustle with outward chaos, but surprising organization, like a colony of ants swarming a carcass. They carried barrels and heavy lead crucibles and armfuls of ingots and all manner of armor and weaponry, and not a single person bumped into another. The only thing louder than the hammers were the curses and laughter. Jeremiah fell in love instantly.
"All right, Master Keller,"
the old dwarf at the entranceway said. He sat on a dais that allowed him to look down at anyone coming and going. He handed Sir Isaac's letter back.
"Since you're with the Redanian delegation, you're allowed access to the foundry. One moment while I find you a suitable forge."
The old dwarf opened up a thick ledger and started running his finger down one of the pages, muttering softly to himself in elder speech. Jeremiah craned his neck and checked the cart he had brought with him. 2 dozen sets of armor from the Order of the Flaming Rose, per Sir Isaac's orders. Jeremiah planned to repair at least a few sets today, but he had other work in mind he was eager to start on.
"Forge 16, the old dwarf nearly shouted. "Each is numbered, and they go in order from right to left. You can't miss it. Don't dawdle, and don't get in the way. May you be productive, Master Keller."
"Thank you, sir,"
Jeremiah yelled over the din. He pulled his cart and entered the foundry. He accidentally bumped into a few dwarves and gnomes on his way to Forge 16, and couldn't escape the angry curses. Jeremiah apologized meekly and hurried along, trying to weave through the bustle. To Jeremiah's dismay, Forge 16 was decidedly smaller than the other forges he had passed, which were accommodating up to 12 dwarves and gnomes at once. 4 other humans crowded around this forge, and they could only work 2 at a time. Jeremiah pulled his cart up and put on his most charming smile.
"I see everyone's been busy."
A woman brushed her slick black hair from her sweating forehead and asked in an Ulfgardian accent, "Who the fuck are you?"
"Jeremiah Keller of Edern. A pleasure to meet you all."
The other 3 didn't pay Jeremiah any mind. The Nilfgaardian shrugged and said, "I'm Ezra. You're assigned to this forge too?"
"It appears so.
Those damn dwarves love crowding us. You'll have to wait your turn. I'm next, then my guard here." Ezra gestured to a greybeard wiping condensation from his glasses as he studied a diagram.
"That's fair. Gives us time to talk in the meantime. What's a Nilfgaardian doing this far north?"
Ezra armed sweat from the side of her neck and shrugged. "My country was moving north. Seemed like a good time to sightsee and perfect my craft." She paused, then added, "Sorry about what we're doing to Edern." Jeremiah scowled. He'd had enough of talking, and waited patiently for his turn. He worked on the armor for the next few hours. When he was relieved of his shift, and felt he had done enough for the Order of the Flaming Rose for now, he walked over to Mygard, who was again fussing over a diagram. He took a seat and mopped his face with his blue bandana and sighed.
"Hard work, is it not?"
Jeremiah said. Mygard looked up from his diagram and squinted at the craftsman.
"Eh? Sorry, I didn't mean to be rude. I'm Jeremiah Keller of Edern."
"Mygard of Kavir. What are you working on?"
"Weapons and armor. Yourself?"
Mygard fished into his pocket and pulled out a few ridged metal screws.
"Harder than it looks to get the design right."
Jeremiah inspected one of the screws. It was fine work. Few imperfections.
"What's it for?"
"Oh, who knows," Mygard said, rolling his diagram up.
"Could be used for any number of machines, really."
Any number of machines indeed, Jeremiah thought.
Maybe even... "Have you any interest in collaborating?" he asked Mygard.
"Depends on what's being made."
Jeremiah took out his own crossbow diagram, complete with his notes. He handed it to Mygard, who wiped his glasses and squinted at it. After a few moments, he looked up at Jeremiah.
"It could work. Some of your calculations are off, but the design is sound.
So what do you say?"
Jeremiah tossed a few screws into the air and caught it.
"I'd be happy to share some of the profit with you."
"Is that so?" he heard Ezra say. The Nilfgaardian was suddenly leaning over the design. Jeremiah snatched it from Mygard's hands. "That's some design, Keller. I think there may be an opportunity here, and I happen to be efficient at crafting weaponry." The other 2 crafters were busy with their own work, thank the gods. Jeremiah did not intend to bring many people into his project, especially with something as risky as his crossbow design. But he needed fresh sets of eyes, and found he could live with 2.
"Many hands make light work. Let's see if we can build a prototype, at least."
Ezra grinned. Mygard tapped the design and said,
"What do you plan to call it?"
Jeremiah had already given it some thought.
"A repeating crossbow."
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from the Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.